on. All right, welcome to a special edition of the Saints Happy Hour Patron Spotlight. This week, this month, we are joined by John Murphy. And John is actually, he qualified for the Saints Drunk History episode, where if you donate at the $25 tier and you donate for 4 months, you get in the raffle to win the Drunk History. John was in the raffle. He won, but he was like, I don't necessarily want to do a Drunk History. And I was like, John, you got to come on. Because John was really sad, like a lot of us were, after the NFC Championship game. He's like, I can't do it. I was like, John, you are one of our we love all of our patrons, but we love the $25 a month people more. I was like, John, when you get over it, you've got to come on and chat with us. So, John, you are here to talk about your experience of being a fan and that sort of thing.
I am. Yeah. It took me a while to get over. Yeah, I was there at the game. Yeah, it took me a little bit to get over. Yeah, it was tough.
Well, I want you to tell the story that you were starting to tell me before we actually started recording. John had a Disney World trip planned, and you had to watch the Saints Eagles at a Disney bar surrounded by Eagles fans.
One of the craziest things I've ever done. All right, so my family and I had planned a trip to Disney, and we were down there. I'm a season ticket holder, sitting 112. We get to go to Disney, had a electric week. You know, we had a great time, and I already packed up our entire family's gear, everything we had, and I said, all right, well, we got to find a bar to watch the game at, because there's nothing, I mean, there's nobody that's going to play the game just at Magic Kingdom. You're not going to go eat hot dogs.
Were you at Orlando or California, Disney World?
Orlando.
Okay.
Orlando. Yeah, so there were 10 of us down there, and my brother-in-law is a Patriots fan, so this is icing on the cake. He's a Patriot. He's been here multiple times. So we end up going, get the kids home. We all get settled at what they call a bar. It was really just a bowling alley. We set up there, and there are at this point 6 Saints fans and an entire bowling alley full of Eagles fans. And if everybody can remember, the game didn't start off too hot.
No, it was bad. It was as bad a start as you could. It was like the Eagles game was like, if you sat and you like drew up the scenario for the bad start, you'd be like, well, the first play, the Saints would have a turnover. Check. The first drive for the Eagles would go down and score. Check.
Touchdown. Check.
The Saints would struggle on offense. The Eagles would get ahead 14-0, and the dome would be tight.
Silent.
Check. It's like every like disaster scenario. Oh, and Sheldon Rankins got carted off. Like it was disaster. The Eagles game was
disaster. Once Sheldon got carted off, I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my goodness, like this is really gonna happen. So the entire bar, or quote unquote bar area, is blowing up with Philly fans. Everybody's, you know, chanting Raven. Finally, we get that pick from Lattimore. And at that point, it kind of changed my mentality. I mean, because I knew the hardest thing was going to be to get to the NFC Championship. All of us that follow the Saints knew that if it's NFC Championship, at home or bust, right? That's what it was kind of. Everybody was thinking, like, you got to get past the Eagles. You got to get past them. And for the first 25 minutes, you're like, I don't know if this is going to work. We're about to get blown out. We look terrible. Look pretty bad. Finally, we come out, get that pick, and go forward. And I get so rambunctious in our little bitty crew that the manager tries to kick us out of the Disney bar because I'm excited that we're finally turning the tables and Lattimore got that pick. And I said, that's ball game. So we're going to go down, drive, whatever. We're better than the Eagles are. But it was just a wild scenario having
it
to be in Disney
World.
It
was euphoric. That stadium, Pete, I mean, and the next week was the polar opposite, right, of the Rams. But walking out of that stadium, people were euphoric because when it was down 14, and they're down 14-0, it's like you're staring death in the face. And you just
that was the second best team we've ever had.
I think it's
11
the
was our best.
I think 2018 is the best team they've ever had. I think 2011 is the best offense that the Saints will probably ever have during my time on this earth. But that
what about
team,
the NFL? I don't think
maybe it's probably like a top three offense in history of the NFL. But I mean, this team was the most complete team. But they walk. I mean, euphoria. But I picture you in Orlando. I picture the guy like Mickey Mouse in the costume coming in. Like,
oh my goodness! I had to ride my kids back on this little bitty boat back to the place to have somebody watch my kids because I used to be pretty aggressive watching Saints games after Beastquake and everything in Seattle. I just learned not to get that worked up over it. But I mean, I was pretty hot over the game.
Yeah.
I was pretty confident. I had never really felt like the Saints were back like they were in 2009, like this year, you know. And I saw this going down. Once we started getting up, the manager tried to kick all of us Saints fans out of the bar.
That's awesome. Was the manager an Eagle fan?
He was from New Jersey. I don't know if he was an Eagles fan. I didn't get into it. My dad finally stepped in. Was like, listen, we've already spent X, Y, Z. We're not leaving. You're not going to kick us out. We'll calm down. They made us calm down.
Yeah.
So at that point, you know, I'm a season ticket holder, so I didn't get to go to a lot of games. My wife had some medical problems. I'm not going to go into it like Kevin. Talk about ball dissection or whatever. But it was an interesting thing. It was crazy to watch how that game played out, you know. And we got up. I knew we were up. I left. And I just would never want that to happen to anybody.
It was an enjoyable – I mean, the Eagles game, because of the way it turned out, it was enjoyable. But the comeback made it – you know, I think if you would have flipped it and the Saints would have got up, like, big and the Eagles would have charged back and the Saints still would have won, I don't think it would have quite been as an enjoyable experience. It was enjoyable to, like, watch the Saints, like, have to, like, grind it out of the dirt. Because the thing is, I just feel like the Saints were so beat to hell at the end of 2018. And I've said it a bunch of times on the Patron Spotlight, as I feel like I'm partially being a therapist for people that the Rams game. But I feel like, you know, at the end of the year, all the offensive line were hurt. Kirkwood was out. Both tight ends were injured, you know, after Josh Hill got the concussion. Like,
yeah.
Their offense was beat to hell. And I think Drew Brees... I think something was physically wrong with him, and I'm not an arm truther.
I do as well. I do as well, and I'm not an arm truther either. But something was up.
I think something was wrong with him, because if you look at him at the end of the NFC Championship game, looked like a quarterback that I have never seen. He looked
scared.
He looked frazzled. He looked like, you know what he looked like? He looked like a guy who knew, or he didn't trust his arm anymore. And that the throw to Ginn was just a YOLO punt. He bounces the one to Michael Thomas that would have been a touchdown, that a throw that he could probably make in his sleep. I just believe Drew Brees, something was wrong with him, and in the NFC Championship game, he came to a point where he's like, I don't know if I can make these throws. And when, as a quarterback, I've never played it, but I can imagine if you start to think that and you're like, can I make this 15-yard out? Can I throw this 20-yard out? Like, once you start thinking that, you're cooked.
They had Bushrod playing left tackle at some point, right?
Yeah.
They knew that it didn't work 5 years previously. So, there was a lot of shuffling. I think the problem, in my opinion, was the offensive line.
Yeah.
What got them there was that offensive line. Right?
Oh, totally. And not
so, and I think that's why Brees was flustered. He didn't. There were a lot of moving pieces in that. I mean,
not having Watson and Hill, it cut off a third of the playbook where they couldn't go two tight ends. And where they beat the Rams was outside running in the first game. They did a nice job with it. I mean, they were a car. They were 8-cylinder engine. They were missing 3 of the cylinders.
Yeah.
You know? And it still took the refs completely screwing them over for the Ravens to get there.
But do you still think, though, like, that Breeze had lost arm strength at the end of the year? Do you think he just lost confidence in that offensive line protecting him to get it over the top?
No, I think something is – you go back and I went back and I watched that game. Something is wrong with his arm. I don't know what, but you look at that throw to Ginn. It was like a punt.
Yeah.
It took like 5 seconds to come down.
Dude, that thing was up in the air for at least half an hour.
It was.
When he threw it, I was sitting there in 112, completely opposite in the stadium, and I was like, ball game.
The thing is with that one.
Right when he threw it, I was like, ball game. That's it.
I was like, John, when Ginn caught that pass, I was like, they're winning. It's just divine intervention going. The Saints are gonna win. Like, but you know, and I hate to go over because it's just. But I want you because you said you know you we won't go into it. But your wife has had medical issues, and I think the thing that interests me and why I enjoy doing these patron spotlights is I like to hear how people become Saints fans, and I really feel like the internet, for all the things that we talk about that it's bad and it brings horrible people together and they do terrible things, whatever. I feel like the internet, for the Saints, it does awesome things and it brings us together. But describe your Saints fandom and when you point to it as a kid where you're like, that's the moment where I knew I was a Saints fan.
So my dad, I mean, I'm from Jackson, Mississippi area. Grew up, you know, my grandfather, my dad, and I would always go to Saints games as I was a kid. I didn't think anything of it. I mean, we were terrible, but it was just something to do. So you go to Ole Miss or Mississippi State and you see all that. Or I've always been interested in professional sports. So, you know, I went through that and
Everybody in my family's an Ole Miss graduate, by the way, except for me.
Oh, well, you're lucky. I went to Mississippi College for finance.
Because side note, Ole Miss used to play games in Jackson, so I used to go to quite a few games. They would play in Jackson; it was closer, and we went to some games in Oxford too.
Jackson. No. I mean, Jackson's changed a lot. But anyway, so I grew up, you know, I'd go to the Superdome all the time with my dad and granddad, you know, a couple times a year. We were never season ticket holders when I was little.
You didn't
little.
Need to be back then, though. You could just buy them as you walked bought up to the
for
game.
Like $5. Like, hey, we got tickets to the game. So, interesting part, fast forward years and years and years, I hate to bring up Katrina, and I hate to do it, but I was going through a lot of turmoil in our family's life, a lot of other stuff going on, and I just kind of latched on. You know, the Saints came to Jackson. They brought in Sean Payton.
Yeah.
It just felt different. Something felt different about the team. It there was something that was exciting again that kind of blew up in the Southeast with the Saints.
Yeah.
You know, Sean Payton coming in was a big deal. And then, you know, they took a chance on Drew, which was a huge contract for them.
I mean, yeah, people don't look at it. People don't realize it back then, but it really was the Drew Brees signing was kind of a little risk because the Saints could have got out of it after 1 year. They basically paid Drew Brees a 1 year, $10 million deal, and he would get a $12 million bonus in March of 2007, right? But the thing that was basically, if Drew Brees would have been – the only way that the Saints were going to hit eject on that deal was if Drew Brees would have been physically unable to play or he'd have been terrible, which you knew by his record. If he was physically able, he wasn't going to be terrible. So the Saints were basically – going to say, hey, we're not taking Leinart, we're not taking Vince Young, and we're moving along. And because you knew that even if Drew Brees would have been, like, mediocre, the Saints would have been locked into him. for at least a couple of years. So it was a risk. It was a more of a risk than I think people realized at the time. But the combination of Breeze and Reggie Bush just ignited Saints fans and excitement.
Man, it was so exciting. Yeah, at that time, I moved out to Los Angeles. And so I was around and lived at a place, you know, Reggie Bush lived close to where I was staying, and some of the other players were around. You know, I'm not saying that I knew him, not say I talked to him, but I mean, it was like a buzz in the air about the Saints, even in Los Angeles.
I mean, I lived in Orange County in 2006 and 2007, Orange County, California, and I can tell you, the excitement I had for Reggie Bush was probably even more so than in New Orleans, because USC at that time ran Los Angeles because the Lakers,
without a doubt.
The Lakers were sort of in the transition. They had Shaq and Kobe had broken up, and they hadn't quite figured it out with Paul Gasol, where they would bring Phil Jackson back and they would win a couple more times. They were still a little bit of ways away from that. So, man, in 2003, 4, 5, 6, 7, USC, they ran that town, man.
It was the king, man. It was the king. I mean, yeah, Reggie was the man. Like, he ran everything. And I mean, you would have thought he was P. Diddy.
I mean, the day that they announced, I think it was either the day before or the day of. No, it was the day before they announced that the Texans had reached a deal with Mario Williams. And I, shit you not, John, I watched Reggie Bush YouTube highlights probably 10 hours on Friday and 10 hours on Saturday during and after they picked him. Like, It was just like football heroin, man. It was just like injected into my veins.
It was crack.
I mean,
you could watch him from 10th grade to USC. He's breaking people's ankles left and right. And
Google, if you are listening to this, Google USC Fresno State 2005.
Is that the play where he cuts it from?
Yeah, he had like 550 total yards. Like,
he cuts it from the boundary line all the way across the field, and then just jet streams it up at a 4-3. It was just wild.
Reggie Bush was really good and fun for the Saints, and I don't regret that pick at all. He was great.
The Saints needed him.
He was needed, and he was a boost and all that. But Reggie in college was just, I mean, I would say in my experience, Reggie and Bo Jackson are the two players that I, in my lifetime, saw in college that were just on another level. Werfel was that way too, but Werfel was sort of that way because Steve Spurrier had built this offense of good players, and Steve Spurrier basically at that time was running the fun and gun, and he was like a dude that had a cell phone while everybody else didn't. So he was like 5 years ahead of everyone. So Werfel, he did amazing things, but you were never like, oh my God, Werfel is this physical specimen. Florida was just like watching color television for the first time, I guess, you know? right? So, you know, like the first time somebody handed you an iPhone and you're like, oh my, you can look at the internet on your, what the hell is this, you know? That's how Florida
somebody
was with Werfel.
Send me a picture. Yeah, and that's how USC was at that time.
It was.
And Reggie Bush was the forefront of it. And he falls to the Saints there. And it just electrified. Like, so for my history, I was still in Los Angeles at the time. Reggie Bush gets picked up by the Saints. Mississippi. Nobody's from Mississippi in Los Angeles. I mean, there are very few people from Mississippi in Los Angeles. There ain't a lot of us. And I just remember being like, yeah, I'm going to stick with it. I mean, I feel like there's something there with the Saints that I can rebound on and kind of feel with it, and I just stuck on with it, man. And I, I trusted it. I mean, I was there at, you know, Jackson training camps at Bellhaven and all the other stuff, you know, all the just craziness the Saints organization had to go through.
Yeah, and look, you know, the Saints, through this stretch, even when it's dipped down and they haven't won, like, it's still, it was, you know, in 14, 15, and 16 when they were in the 7-9, you know, sadness loop, it still wasn't uninteresting because Drew Brees was still at the peak of his powers and he could drag the
I'm gonna drag
these terrible defenses to 7 wins. So it was still interesting, right? It was frustrating, but it wasn't like a sadness of like the Browns or like Buffalo or the Raiders. You know, it wasn't a sadness, hopelessness to it. It was like, can we get it fixed before it's too late?
You're exactly right. Like, I think everybody, and I can't speak for it, but I think everybody was like, what about that championship? Like, where did that team go? What happened to that team that we thought was going to be able to do it for at least get one more chip?
I mean, they've had the Saints in the Sean Payton era, 2009, 2011, 2017, and 2018, to me, are the four teams that they had that legitimately could have won a Super Bowl. And I know 2006 they got to the NFC Championship game, but
that team wasn't ready.
That year the NFC was such trash. You know, like if you put the 2017, 2018, 2011 Saints to 2006, they would have gone 13-3 and won a Super Bowl. Like, because that they would have run that Chicago team. I think they'd have gone to Chicago and run that Chicago team out of the Soldier Field. But because the NFC was just so bad. But I mean, they've had four legitimate shots to win a title. They won one. They got screwed out of another. And
a freakish play
against Minnesota cost them a shot at the other. San Francisco, their defense was just trash, and they couldn't cover Vernon Davis. You know.
2011. So, I think that's the most painful thing. As a Saints fan, the non-call this year was bad.
It's
the missed tackle. The missed tackle in Minnesota was bad, but you couldn't say you
didn't feel cheated. You were just like, I can't believe that hurt. It was a Hail Mary, right? It's just at the end of the game,
right?
It was like, I don't understand how that happened. It was like this. It would the Saints won, but they didn't get to play the next week. You know, and 2011, you're just like, you couldn't cover Vernon Davis, and you turned the ball over 5 times in the first half. Like, that's what you get. But like the Rams
hold on real quick. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that they couldn't cover Vernon Davis, or do you think that it was all because of Greg Williams wouldn't just let Harper play cover one?
I think it's a cop out is a little bit of both. But they weren't, when Vernon Davis caught the touchdown, like, they weren't in an aggressive defense there. They just, the thing is with that team, which was weird, is that defense, it actually, once they stopped turning the ball over, the defense had a stretch in that game where it was fine.
Well, we had 5 turnovers that game, right?
Yeah. But the thing is, at the end of the game, they totally were shook and they had totally lost their confidence. And they just, Alex Smith, he did the fake boot and ran for like a 30 a touchdown. Like, the defense, it's not about, people talk about, I don't necessarily believe in momentum. I think momentum is something that we say.
Unathletic people that aren't,
you know, we say about momentum to explain something that's happened, right? So I'm not a big believer in momentum. But I am a believer in a team losing its confidence and gets shook during the game. And I believe in 2011, like, the Saints defense, like, the last 6 minutes, they were totally shook. They just They had no confidence, and they were just and they had no confidence. And Greg Williams, whenever it's crunch time, Greg Williams' solution to everything is blitz, usually, right? Mm-hmm. And it worked out great in 2009, like against the Colts when it was crunch time. They blitzed everybody. Tracy Porter gets the pick. We get a parade. So
yeah, he runs the same play as he did against Vernon. Yeah,
you know,
right.
I mean, that's like Greg Williams. It doesn't matter the question. The salute. The answer is blitz.
Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's why he's going to get fired up this year.
But how did you? Because there's 9,000. I feel like there's. You know, we were talking before the show. I feel like there's 100 Saints podcasts now, and there's not as many bloggers, right? Like there used to be. From like 2011 to about 2014, there were phenomenal Saints bloggers.
2014.
What's that?
No, it's bringing up 2014. It's like, of course, everybody dropped off then.
They had Wang. They had Angry Hoodad, who he's
– He's still there.
He's on Twitter, at least.
I don't know if he writes.
I've met him in real life. Dominic is a wonderful person in real life. On Twitter, he is insufferable, and I block him because I cannot take it. He was wonderful. I've tailgated with him multiple times for Saints games in the past, and he's a wonderful, nice guy. But on Twitter, he's just insufferable, so I blocked him. But he used to write. Reed Gilbert, Wang. They had about 3, 4, 5 bloggers that I would say were at times better and funnier writers than me. But the thing is, at WWL, I just keep turning them out. You know, I don't have anywhere to go. I gotta write. It's like part of me. Like I gotta write my Saints columns for my own sanity.
Yeah, but it makes sense, though. I think the thing that's awesome about this podcast and the way I found it is I was talking to somebody today because I was like, yeah, I'm going to go talk to a friend of mine I've never even spoken to, you know, and I was like, I'm going to talk about some Saint stuff. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. And he was like, how did you get into Twitter? And like, I got into y'all's podcast through Twitter.
Yeah.
Because when the Bounty Gate stuff broke, it was breaking so fast. It was there was so much information going through so fast. So I got on Twitter.
The Bounty Gate stuff is what made our podcast a year-round enterprise. Like we discovered that during Bounty Gate, all the other podcasts for the Saints had sort of like taken a break because back then, 2000 Saints podcast, they didn't have as many of them, right? But they didn't like they would be like we go during the year and then. We'll go a little during the draft, and then we'll fire this thing back up in July. Like, what are we going to talk about in the dead spots?
I know what my draft grades are for so-and-so. It's like, motherfucker, you don't have a pod. Like, you don't have a job doing that. Shut up.
So, we started that. The Bounty Gate is what made us go every week, and we found that people found us. And I can remember when we did it, Andrew at the time was like, dude, we just need to keep going and it'll just be a habit and people will just stick around and then the season will come and we'll get even more people. We got to do it every week. And I'm like, Andrew, what are we going to talk about every week? He's like, it doesn't matter. It's just, we'll just do it and it'll be a habit. And people will say, and he was right.
Yeah, because I reached out to Andrew before, I mean, like a week or two ago. And I was like, man, like, because I don't do podcast. I have a friend of mine that has an ESPN show. I don't talk. I don't talk about my stuff. Like, I listen. I don't want to, because I don't know what I'm talking about, right? So I found you guys and just started listening.
Yeah.
And started following and started just listening to y'all's stuff. And that's why I started donating, because, I mean, y'all are as much fun as everybody plays. Like, that's what sports should be. Don't take it too serious. It's fun.
I think for us and you know, I love the Dan Le Batard show. I think it's the best sports show there is. And his sports show is basically making fun of sports talk radio, and it's ridiculous.
Right.
And the thing is, that listening to Dan Le Batard the last, I listened to him even before he was the main show on ESPN. Like, I listened to him when he was in Miami. I found him and would listen on the ticket through there.
That's funny.
Like, the thing about, but the thing that I learned from him, and it's not that you copy it, because you can't copy there, you can't copy him, but I think the thing that his show does that I think that our show tries to do is we want you to connect to us on a personal level, and we want you to know Ralph is drinking, Dave is doing this, and Dave is eating horribly and eating too much, and Andrew
give Dave
is ranting and
shit.
Raving and playing tennis and getting excited about winning his tennis club championship because he just beat a 55-year-old woman at tennis. like and we want you to know if you I feel like we are open in a way that other podcasts aren't, and the thing that does is Saints news will happen. And people will respond on Twitter asking us, is Andrew all right? Is this okay? Is Dave all right? How are you doing? And they listen to the show because they know, or they think they know, how we're going to react to certain things that happen. And they want to hear our reaction because they feel like they know us. And so they want to see it. And I think that is one thing that I love about – I love it when they have Saints breaking news or the Saints – when they – like if they draft somebody with a horrible name this year that that people know I cannot pronounce.
I really do hope they do. Honestly,
within 15 minutes after the pick, my little Twitter account with 4,000 people, I'll have 30 notifications – of people sending me gifts and jokes and just giddy to hear me butcher a name come Monday after the draft. Like, and that makes me so happy that people, they like, oh, Jesus, Ralph's not going to be able to get that. And people are already doing it. Like, people are like, I want the Saints to draft this. I don't even know what he plays, Ralph. I want them to draft him because I know you cannot say the name. Like, that makes me so happy, and it feels like we really have – we've built a little community that's special that feel that way. And are, I wouldn't say, like, invested in the podcast, but they get excited about little things about that.
Detail,
that have nothing
to, like, little details that,
yeah,
like, nobody
like it has
really
nothing,
understands.
It's not a draft grade. It's not a covered – it's not a 4-3. It's not an under technique. It's not a – you know, it's not good hands. It's not good route running. It's not the route tree. It's – we want to listen to Ralph not pronounce these names. Like, it makes me so happy.
And also saying, like, all right, well, Onyemata got drafted. I will never forget. I was sitting in the car with my friend driving. I don't know. We were going to play golf or something. And we had the draft on the radio. And he was like, hey, the Saints picked David Onyemata. I was like, this is going to be hilarious to watch Ralph pronounce Onyemata for a while. It's like an inside joke with just Saints fans that you follow the podcast.
He's like, they traded up to draft a guy from Canada?
The Canada.
I'm like, yeah. Has played football for like 10 minutes. I'm like, that might not work out. So,
and that's how this draft's probably going to go.
So,
it's like, oh, who in the heck is it?
So, you know, this will probably be –
This is all over the map.
This episode will probably be after the draft. But before we get out of here, John, what's your sort? Obviously, the hope for 2019, I think, for everybody is the Saints finally get us the Super Bowl that was stolen from us, and maybe Drew Brees can end on a high note. But that's our hopes. But what's your expectations of 2019? What's your what's your realistic hope and expectation for it?
Atlanta's still dangerous. I really do believe so. Matt Ryan's not a bad quarterback. It's going to be a tough division. But it's still the Saints to win. They've loaded up so much on these ghost contracts. Casper is going to be the leading free agency.
I think Atlanta – I'll get into this. We'll get into this. I think Atlanta is teetering on – being blown up. I really believe that Atlanta is a really bad September away from Dan Quinn getting fired. I really believe that. I think because here's the thing. Dan Quinn is a defensive coach, John, and Atlanta's defense is terrible. So, you know, it was with Sean Payton when they went 7-9. We never questioned the offense, not a one time. We might complain about the play calling or whatever, but we never questioned at all that Sean Payton.
No, we
he
just
was doing
said Gary
offense.
Gibbs was terrible. All of us just say, "Oh, Gary Gibbs is terrible."
But here's the thing.
Coach.
Here's the thing. Sean Payton, his thing was offense. So if the Saints were going 7-9 and couldn't score on offense, and the defense was great, we'd have been like, Sean Payton, you're an offensive coordinator. Why are you here? If you can't get this offense fixed, that's your thing, man. If you can't get that fixed, why are you here? And I think that's what's going to happen with Quinn. If their defense is really bad again, Atlanta's going to be like, dude, you're a defensive coordinator. Why are you here? And I think there's a chance that they fire him. If it'd have to start out really bad.
It's
going to
happen soon. He's the hottest draft. I mean, he's got to be the hottest on the hot seats, right? I mean, he's got to. I mean,
I think
Super
Carolina,
Bowl.
Too, because they have a new owner. So.
Oh. That's why, I mean, you know this. You and Andrew and all you guys know more than I do. They have signed and built this roster to win this year, right? There's no other way. They have $80-something million in salary cap next year. And everybody's like, oh, that's a lot of money. It's like, well, you have 2016 draft class and 2017 draft class that's going to be paid. And you and Andrew covered it about Kamara, like, what do you do? Or Thomas, like, what do you do? Like, do you sign both of them? They're going to have to sign all these guys. So at some point, there's going to be some movement.
Well,
I don't know who.
And here's the thing, and then we'll wrap this up. And I said this on you. Thanks everybody. Look, if you want to be on the drunk history that John didn't want to do, but we did an extended patron spotlight with him, and it's been fantastic. You can donate at $5 level. You can get in that raffle, or you can donate $25 for 4 months. You get your own episode of Drunk History that we'll do. We'll pick two Saints topics and do it. But I want to say, John, you know, the 2017 draft, what it did for the Saints was it was so phenomenal. It opened up a 3-year window, 2017,
yep.
2018, and 2019. This is the last year of it. And it doesn't mean the window doesn't necessarily slam shut, I don't believe, because I think they have Bridgewater and they have a lot of young guys, and I don't think they're going to be bad or whatever. But this is the last year where you get to have this loaded roster with all these young guys, because starting next year, Rankins, Lattimore, Thomas, Kamara, Cam Jordan's going to want more money. Like, they have to make these really hard
decisions. Yeah, and you guys had posted, I mean, the Marcus Lawrence from the Cowboys got $100+ million contract. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of moves to be made.
Yeah.
But I think the Saints are finally set up to take care of who they want to take care of, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to happen no matter what, but they got to win it this year.
Yeah,
and that,
it's true. They got to win this year. And the thing is for the Saints, they have the calls become you can't keep everybody, so the guys you pay have to be the right guys. You know, and Seattle did it in a way where they sort of paid all their guys and they made the right calls. They let Byron Maxwell leave. They let a couple other guys leave that didn't really work out, and they were right. But it becomes a hard call because you can't pay everybody. But John, I just want to thank you again, and I want to thank all the patrons, the $25 people. You're all going to get your drunk history. We're excited. Me and Dave came up with a new exciting way to do drunk history. Instead of trying to do one topic and try to stretch it out to 30 minutes or an hour, we're going to pick two topics and we're just going to do 15 minutes. So we're going to do like really micro Saints topics, like single games or Aaron Brooks throwing the ball backwards. So it's going to be really, we're going to have some really cool stuff. So donate, people.
Exciting.
Donate at the $25 level that you can. If you can't, donate at the $5 or $7 level so you can get the daily show. John, I'm so glad we finally got to get this done. You qualified for this in December, guy. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it, man.
thanks a bunch for giving me a bunch of time on Friday night. For the rest of you, this has been a special extended patron Saints Happy Hour patron spotlight. Until next time, the bar is closed.
Who dat?